The summer's 8th concert program is bookended by two of Western music's most revered masters. Ludwig van Beethoven, whose string trio Opus 9 No. 1 documents the composer's early professional career, and Johannes Brahms, whose piano quintet reveals him at the height of his powers. In between these, the program offers an irresistible miniature by a transformational figure in the violin tradition, the composer virtuoso Eugène Ysaÿe. Before trying his hand at the string quartet, Beethoven prepared for the task of tackling his teacher Haydn's signature genre by writing a number of string trios. The ensemble of violin, viola, and cello is notoriously difficult to write for. Without the benefit of a second violin, the composer is left with limited options for distributing melody while filling out harmonies and textures. Beethoven methodically sharpened his part-writing blade on his Serenade Opus 8 and three string trios Opus 9 before setting to work on his Opus 18 string quartets. These were the first of his iconic cycle of 16 quartets, and he never returned to the string trio medium. Yet the Opus 9 trios demonstrate no less ambition than the Opus 18 quartets. Beethoven's handling of instrumental forces is masterful indeed, as he contrasts the rich sonority of the full ensemble with conversational passages between three voices. Each instrument emerges to the foreground here, recedes to the background there, resulting in dynamic textures throughout each of the three trios.
The trio in G major, Opus 9, No. 1, is an irresistibly joyful work. The work begins with a grand forte gesture in octaves, followed by impish 16th note figures and lyrical rejoinders. Following this curtain-raising introduction, the first movement launches into its allegro proper. The joie de vivre of this extroverted music is accentuated by audacious melodic leaps of more than 2 octaves. Contrasting second theme, though whispered pianissimo and staccato, is no less convivial. The depth of Beethoven's musical imagination is on display in the ensuing development section, which, though brief, reimagines earlier thematic material to significantly stretch the movement's expressive canvas. The lovely Adagio's second movement calls to mind the sublime slow movements of Mozart. ¶¶ even occasional forays into dark minor key passages are fleeting, and the prevailing air is one of idyllic serenity. The ephemeral scherzo movement, buoyant and carefree, offsets the tranquil adagio. The trio concludes with a spirited presto. As in the first movement, thematic ideas here differ in their cosmetic details, loud or soft, staccato or legato, but the music's character remains bright and exuberant to the finish.
In 1874, the 16-year-old Eugène Ysaÿe received a scholarship that enabled him to study with Henryk Wieniawski in Brussels, and subsequently with Henri Vieuxtemps in Paris. In addition to exposing him to a bustling concert life, Ysaÿe's studies in Paris afforded him the opportunity to cultivate important artistic contacts, including the composers Camille Saint-Saëns, César Franck, Gabriel Fauré, and Ernest Chausson. His rich pedigree groomed Ysaÿe to inherit the mantle of a French violin lineage that had increased in stature over the previous century. In Ysaÿe's care, this essentially romantic tradition entered into a new era of instrumental virtuosity. The greatest violinist of the generation following Paganini, Ysaÿe in turn had a profound influence on the subsequent class of great virtuosi, including Enescu, Flesch, Zigeti, and Kreisler. Musicologist Michel Stockham writes that Ysaÿe, quote, abandoned the old style of Joachim, Wieniawski, Sarasate, and Auer for one that combined rigorous technique and forceful sound with creative freedom on the part of the interpreter. He also represented a synthesis of the qualities of Franco-Belgian violin playing before virtuosity became an end in itself, end quote. Meanwhile, Ysaÿe developed into an accomplished composer in his own right, as most famously manifested in his 6 sonatas for solo violin, Opus 27. These sonatas illustrate Ysaÿe's approach to the principle of virtuosity, indeed not an end in itself, but a tool to be deployed in the service of musical expression. His Rêve d'enfant, Opus 14, a bagatelle overshadowed by the solo sonatas, is dedicated à mon petit Antoine, Ysaÿe's youngest son. It is a beguiling lullaby in gently rocking 6/8 time and featuring a simple violin melody played piano dolce, far short of the technical wizardry of the solo sonatas, but revealing in exquisite distillation their underlying lyrical soul. Violinist James Thompson.
Just a beautiful short piece for violin and piano, A Child's Dream. And you can really hear the influences, I think, of the Franco-Belgian sound world. It's got these gorgeous harmonies reminiscent of maybe Franck or Fauré, with a little bit of a funky twist that Izai puts on things to kind of make it all his own.
Johannes Brahms' piano quintet underwent a curious genesis. The work began as a string quintet for two violins, viola, and two cellos. Completed in 1862, the quintet in this original version was deemed imperfect by both Brahms and the violinist Josef Joachim. Brahms rearranged the piece into a sonata for two pianos, which he premiered with the pianist Karl Tausig in 1864. Later that year, the work evolved towards its final incarnation for piano and string quartet. The obsessive perfectionism illustrated by the work's gestation is equally in evidence in its musical content. An oft-noted defining quality of Brahms's music is its airtight craftsmanship. Each note is meticulously vetted, counterpoint between all voices is unassailable, and every motivic idea is essential to the work's structure. This last quality is particularly discernible in the quintet's first movement, which begins with a four-measure introduction, stated in octaves, mezzo forte, by first violin, cello, and piano. What sounds like an innocuous prologue, in fact contains not only the first theme, but a germinal motif from which springs the whole of the preceding movement. Following an expectant fermata, the piano transforms these introductory measures into a propulsive 16th note figure. Above this, the strings exclaim a sequence of chords, built on a two-note descending figure, a gesture likewise embedded in the four-measure introduction. As the music gathers steam, the piano develops these descending two notes, while the strings take up the propulsive 16th notes. Ensuing musical ideas likewise derive from the two-note descending motif, a keening melody, piano espressivo, presented by the first violin. And soon thereafter, a martial 2-against-3 passage. which leads into an ardent strain into viola and cello, sotto voce. As this newly formulated theme develops, the piano accompanies with a 16th note pattern derived from the quintet's opening. Brahms continues in this manner, constructing a majestic movement with breathtaking mastery and elegance from the simplest materials. The second movement, marked Andante un poco adagio, transfigures the two-note motif, the fuel for so much Sturm und Drang in the first movement, into a sweetly lilting lullaby. The piano sings the tune, piano espressivo sotto voce, to a gentle accompaniment in the strings. The key changes from warm A-flat major to radiant E major for the rhapsodic subsidiary theme, crooned by the second violin and viola. An initial stepwise descent expands into a series of cascading triplets. The lullaby returns to bring the movement to a tranquil close. The scherzo comprises three distinct musical ideas, heard in quick succession at the outset, building an irrepressible momentum from one to the next. The apprehensive opening in 6/8 time sets an offbeat, rising arpeggio in the first violin and viola above persistent pizzicati in the cello and laconic piano commentary. This melody's fluid motion is abruptly halted by the second musical idea, a clipped staccato march in 2/4 time. The third theme transmutes the march's inexorable rhythmic energy into a full-throated anthem. Brahms goes on to develop these themes with a restlessness quite exceeding a typical scherzo, demonstrating a technique later identified by Arnold Schoenberg as developing variation. In his essay, Brahms the Progressive, Schoenberg described Brahms's facility at, quote, variation of the features of a basic unit producing all the thematic formulations, which provide for fluency, contrasts, variety, logic, and unity on the one hand, and character, mood, expression, and every needed differentiation on the other hand, thus elaborating the idea of the piece. End quote. Witness the scherzo's climax, which brings together elements of all three ideas. The strings reprise the march, while the piano restates the offbeat opening, now with the anthem's robust chordal texture. The movement features a noble trio section before reprising the scherzo. The quintet's finale begins with a lugubrious introduction, searching melodic lines in the strings, buoyed by a tide of triplet chords in the piano. After a pregnant silence, the movement launches into its main allegro section, driven by a dance-like tune redolent of the gypsy music that so captivated Brahms throughout his life. A secondary theme contrasts this animated music with a mournful song, yet retains something of its folk character. Likewise, the exposition's closing theme, a variation of the gypsy dance. After a duly realized development and recapitulation, the mighty quintet finishes with a blazing presto coda. Audio notes are authored and produced by Patrick Castillo and narrated by David Finkel, Patrick Castillo, and Wu Han. Musical excerpts appear courtesy of the following artists and organizations. Ludwig van Beethoven's String Trio in G Major, Opus 9, No. 1, performed by Arno Sussman, Paul Neubauer, and David Finkel, appears courtesy of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. Eugenie Zeis' Rêve d'Enfant, performed by Arno Sussman and Heian Park, and Johannes Brahms' Piano Quintet, performed by Wu Han, Georgia Flizanis, Ian Swenson, Cynthia Phelps, and Ralph Kirschbaum, are available on Music at Menlo Live. Audio notes are a copyrighted production of Music at Menlo.